Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Since October 7th, 2023, the Jewish community here in Columbus has been on edge. From attacks on synagogues and over 200 examples of hate speech across the city, the anxiety of the community has run deep. One organization, Jewish Columbus, has offered a safe space and assistance when it comes to helping Jewish people in Columbus. However, a WOSU records request reveals the organization may have overreached in certain reporting. Joining us now is George Shilcock, WOSU news reporter, who just released a three-part series on anti-Semitism in Columbus. Welcome to the show, George.
Hi, Amy.
So how did you get started on reporting this series? Why do a series on anti-Semitism?
Yeah, so I actually got a tip back in around March or April of this year from someone who works in a law enforcement office in a different city in Ohio. They told me that basically, they were getting inundated with a lot of emails from a branch of the Jewish Federations of North America in their city reporting anti-Semitism, but then also reporting protest activity that was critical of Israel. And I thought to myself, well, that city's not in really WOSU's jurisdiction, so let me reach out to the Franklin County Sheriff's Office, Columbus Police, and see if they were getting similar reports. And it turns out they were.
So this led you to making kind of a records request just to try to figure out what was going on. Can you talk to me about that journey of the public records request?
Yeah. So my public records requests in a situation like this always start off with me emailing the sheriff's office and being like, hey, I'm requesting every email from date A, the first date being October 7th, 2023, mm-hmm. the attack on Israel by Hamas, to the current date, which at that time was about mid-April of this mm-hmm. year, and being like, hey, I want every email sent from this group that includes these keywords. So I gave them Jewish Columbus as a group and the Jewish Federations of North America. And I said, any of these keywords, so like anti-Semitism, Israel, Hamas, protests. And I got back like dozens and dozens of emails a few months later after a bit of a process of it being reviewed by the county.
Hmm. So your three-part series explores different aspects of the issue of anti-Semitism and how it relates to the Israel-Palestine conflict. And we're going to dive into different parts of that over the course of this hour. But I do encourage our listeners to find all three reports. They're at WOSU.org, so you can listen to them as well. Now, you interviewed a lot of people for this series. You talked to a lot of sources. You visited Tiferef Israel, and you talked about security at the synagogue. Here's the associate rabbi, Alex Braver, showing you the east side of the synagogue and how they protect it.
This is the new reality,
yes.
is this debate between we want to be welcoming, open our doors, be public, share what we have, and invite people in, and we
yes.
need to make sure that people are safe.
So making sure people are safe. They told you that they keep their doors locked, have increased security. What does that look like for the synagogue?
Yeah. So it's really evident the first moment you pull up to their parking lot on East Broad Street. They have a sign right outside their door. It's on the back side of the building that says, hey, this is under constant surveillance. Mm-hmm. You can look up. You could see the security cameras. And obviously, when you walk up to the door, there's a sign that says, hey, you need to buzz in because it's locked, and someone will answer and be like, hey, like, who are you? Yeah, why are you here? Oh, you're here to meet with the rabbi? Okay, we'll let you in. Mm-hmm. Inside, it's much less evident. It looks like a synagogue, but there's still reminders of the October 7th attack in there, such as they have an empty table, dining room table with empty chairs to sort of symbolize the hostages are still being held by Hamas. But they also, I didn't meet any of them, but they also have armed security guards, and they have a really good relationship with police in case anything does happen.
And you talked to them about the increased security coming after the October 7th attack because there was just more anti-Semitism coming out after that. But then also, didn't it have ripple effects of from the Tree of Life Synagogue, the incident in Pittsburgh? So was there already increased security from back then?
Yes. So Tiferet Israel, Rabbi Braver, and then their president, Nancy Gerwin, and then as well as my sources with Jewish Columbus, all harken back to the Tree of Life massacre in Pittsburgh and said that was really the point where anti-Semitism really, really started to spike and they really wanted to increase security. But October 7th just really took it to this other level.
Mm. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about anti-Semitism in Columbus with George Shilcock, a WOSU News reporter, who just released a three-part series exploring the topic. So you interview different groups for this. You interviewed Jewish Columbus, who we're talking about here. You also interviewed another group called Jewish Voice for Peace. Starting with Jewish Columbus, you talked to them about the increase in anti-Semitism, and the Jewish Columbus president and CEO, Julie Tilson Stanley, says the uptick in anti-Semitism has the community on edge.
Our community was living in fear, and we want Jews to live their lives without fear, and we want them to have meaningful lives and feel proud of their Judaism if they so want to.
So is this why Jewish Columbus has been reporting activity to the police? They fear that if there's a gathering, that it's going to be like an anti-Semitic gathering. They have fear for the Jewish community. Can you tell me about the types of activities they're reporting?
Yeah. So they were reporting what we typically think of as anti-Semitism first. So Tiferet Israel, the synagogue I visited, they both had a man come up to a congregant on October 7th and threaten them, saying, quote, Hamas should have killed more of you, or something along those lines. And they also had a banner burned. They had a banner up that said they calling for the hostages at Israel the Israeli hostages to be brought home. They had that burned down. Mm-hmm. But then you could think of other things. They were reporting the Nazis that marched through the Short North in November 2024. They reported multiple other threats. There were two Jewish students that were accosted and assaulted on Ohio State University's campus because of their Jewish identity. The person had asked, are you Jewish, before assaulting them. Mm-hmm. So lots of different things. But then my records request found they went that step further and were also reporting protest activity. Students for Justice in Palestine is probably the main organizer here on Ohio State University's campus, but they were reporting marches down High Street. They were reporting stuff at the State House. They were going a lot further than just reporting anti-Semitism. They were reporting actions that were critical of Israel. And they explicitly stated that in their emails. This isn't like an assumption I made. They even had one email that said list of anti-Semitic incidents, and under it was actual anti-Semitism. But then also one of the bullet points literally said protest activity between October 2023 and May 2024 that was critical of Israel and is anti-Zionist.
Hmm. Now, what were they hoping to accomplish if they're reporting it to the police? Because sometimes whenever there's a protest, the police already know about it. I mean, sometimes you need a permit depending on where you are, or you let the police know, hey, we're gathering, as a good faith gesture. So what was Jewish Columbus hoping in reporting to the police, that there would be more of a police presence or awareness?
I asked them, and they said that it was primarily for awareness purposes. And you could see that in some of the emails. They prefaced it with FYSA. That's an acronym that means for your situational awareness. It's like a military term that police use too.
Oh, okay.
But there is this context that they're reporting it to, they were sending this email to police. Hmm. It's not like you send protest activity to police because you agree with it.
Hmm.
So you are sending it to police for a specific reason. Whether it's awareness or not, you are still telling police that this event is happening.
And from their perspective, they were doing that because they wanted more police presence. They wanted more protection, right?
They kept using the word awareness.
Awareness.
So
what they
pointed out to me was they didn't believe the protests, despite what their actions are saying. They said they didn't believe the protests as a whole were anti-Semitic. They said there were individuals at the protests who had go up to a Jewish person during the protest and say stuff like, we hope you die, or really nasty things, not in the chants themselves of the protest, but within individuals' actions within the protest group.
There's another group that you talked about that has a different view on some things. They have a different view than Jewish Columbus. This group is called Jewish Voice for Peace. And one of their events was reported to police by Jewish Columbus. So this was a Holocaust remembrance event that was hosted by Jewish Voice for Peace. Jewish Columbus noted when they reported it that they believed the event would include speech that is critical of Israel. So here's Ian Gadosi, who is a member of Jewish Voice for Peace.
It's reminiscent of arguments I've heard online of Jews who are anti-Zionist not being real Jews or self-hating Jews, things like that, attacking our identity because we oppose occupation, oppose genocide.
So were you surprised to find out that even an event hosted by a Jewish group got reported to the police? You know, in this case, it was because a speaker might be critical of Israel.
Yeah. So Jewish Voice for Peace is a protest group. They're not primarily a protest group. They're an activist and protest group that helped organize these anti-war protests when Israel first retaliated against Hamas. They've been doing this for a while, so it wasn't super surprising to me to find them mentioned in this records request because they helped organize a lot of these events. In that email, they had also reported a protest against Joyce Beatty, I believe, Congresswoman Joyce Beatty, because of her support of Israel. And in this email, like you said, they mentioned that they were reporting the Holocaust Remembrance event at the Holocaust Remembrance Memorial here in Columbus. But then they also kind of pointed to this group and said, we don't know anyone, any Jewish people within this group to the police.
Okay. So implying that they were worried about what might happen there,
yes.
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess this gets into what these different reports. It gets into this idea of being Zionist and versus anti-Semitic. And we're going to have a history professor on in just a few minutes who's going to help us define these terms a little bit better than maybe you and I can. But can you just talk about, it's the idea that speaking out against Israel can be seen by some as anti-Semitic. Is that where the line was? But other people in the Jewish organization, other people who are Jewish maybe don't agree with that.
Yeah, there's a clear line here between hate speech and political speech. So Zionism is a movement that goes, and we'll probably have this explained, is a movement that goes back thousands of years, but really kind of upped in post-World War II timeline in trying to get a Jewish state established, right? Mm-hmm. That's a very political movement. And that was being reported alongside anti-Semitism, which is hate against Jewish people. Again, what we think of like the Nazis trying to exterminate the Jewish people, like synagogues being harassed and attacked and Jewish people being accosted because of their identity. But you could see throughout this story, there's a trend in not just Jewish Columbus's actions, but in our politics in this country of this line attempting to be blurred. Like you could see it in President Donald Trump and revoking visas of people who were protesters and critical of Israel. You could see it in other things the Trump administration has done as well.
So I wanted to note that we did invite Jewish Columbus to be on the show today. They did not answer our emails or a phone call. And we also reached out to Jewish Voice for Peace to be on the show. We did not hear back from them either. Whenever you talk to Jewish Columbus, I mean, you obviously had these records and they talked to you. You sat down with them and you did an interview. So what did they say whenever you asked about that line between just saying something negative about Israel and that being anti-Semitic?
So Julie Tilson Stanley told me directly that she said she doesn't believe speech as critical of Israel is anti-Semitic, but there are some lines that could be crossed, such as when you generalize opinions about Jewish people, when you say things about like Israel's actions being the fault of all Jewish people. Like there are lines that can be crossed. But then their security director, who I spoke to, Mike Higgins, said that he believed that the protesters were using, and he generalized this to the whole group, that the protesters were using this as an excuse to be anti-Semitic, the whole conflict and being against the war.
Did you talk with Jewish Columbus also about it not being just other Jewish groups, but then there's also Muslim groups who have held protests and candlelight vigils. And then there's the whole idea of like
the extreme Christians or the neo-Nazis marching down High Street. I mean, it's not just one group, right?
Yes.
What did they have to say about that?
One of the first documents I showed them, after talking with them generally about, again, increasing security because of actual anti-Semitism that was happening, I showed them a document which showed they reported an event by the Noor Muslim student group. This is a small group of mostly young women and girls here in the Columbus area. They organized a candlelight vigil, and on their Instagram post, which Jewish Columbus included, it explicitly said, hey, this isn't a protest, no speeches, no like signs, just leave candles, leave flowers, and go. This is trying to remember the victims in Gaza. They reported that to police, even though it wasn't overt political activity. It was just trying to remember people that have died in this war, and they reported it to police anyway.
Do you know if police showed up at it?
I asked the Franklin County Sheriff, who that document was sent to. They said they didn't. This is a protest at the State House, so it's probably not uncommon for Ohio State Highway Patrol to be there. They go to a lot of protests. I was at one last week where they went to a protest, and it's pretty normal. But the Franklin County Sheriff's Office did not show up, and I wasn't there. So I don't know if police were there.
Yeah. So maybe the normal amount of security that's always around was around, but maybe not extra.
Yeah.
But it was reported for awareness, right?
Exactly.
Got it. We're talking with WOSU News reporter George Shilcock, and he's staying with us. And we're going to be joined by an Ohio State history professor who specializes in Jewish history. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. WOSU's George Shilcock produced a three-part series exploring how one Jewish organization in Columbus has taken steps to protect their community following a rise in anti-Semitism since October 7, 2023. The organization would report activity to police for awareness and protection. But some of the reports included peaceful protests and vigils. And that's where pro-Palestinian organizations are saying Jewish Columbus went too far. We're talking about anti-Semitism in Columbus with George Shilcock, WOSU News reporter. Thanks again for being here, George.
Thanks, Amy.
And joining us now to discuss the history of anti-Semitism and to get her thoughts on some things that have happened in recent years is Ohio State University history professor Robin Judd. She's also the author of the book Between Two Worlds, Jewish War Brides After the Holocaust. Welcome to All Sides, Professor Judd.
Thanks so much for inviting me, Amy. It's a pleasure to be here.
So when you think of anti-Semitism over time, like the history of it versus now, like what comes to mind? What has changed? What has stayed the same?
So let's begin actually with the definition of anti-Semitism. And you can't take the scholar or teacher out of the interviewee, so I apologize. But when we talk about anti-Semitism, we're often referring to hostility, discrimination, prejudice against Jews and Jewish institutions as Jews. And what's changed over time is context, time, and place. So anti-Semitism at its core has been that definition, but the codes, whether direct or indirect, whether explicit or implicit, those change depending on time and place. So anti-Semitism in late 19th century Paris may look different than anti-Semitism in early 20th century Slovakia. And that's where we as historians are kind of always looking to these shifts that we might see.
So we touched on this a little bit so far, but the line between anti-Semitism and Zionism is sometimes becoming blurry. So can you explain Zionism for us?
Well, I certainly can, I can try, in that Zionism refers to a national movement that envisions a Jewish homeland and In the late 19th century, we begin to have the emergence of different Zionist movements. They looked quite disparate from one another. There were some Zionists who envisioned themselves creating a state in what would eventually become the State of Israel. There were some Zionists who thought about creating semi-autonomous communities in their own states in which they lived. But over the course of the 20th century, Zionism increasingly referred to the nationalist movement that supports the state for the Jewish people, the State of Israel.
So part of this discussion and part of what came out through George Shilcock's three-part series is the question of whether if you are anti-Zionist, meaning you speak out against the country of Israel in this particular example, does that automatically make you anti-Semitic? Where do you come down on that idea of speaking out against Israel? Is it anti-Semitic?
As you might imagine, that is a question that I have received a good bit over the last few years. And again, I go back to my definition, right? Anti-Semitism as discrimination, prejudice, hostility, or violence against Jews or Jewish institutions as Jews. And when we think about that definition, when we ground ourselves in that definition, then speaking out against a sovereign state like the State of Israel isn't necessarily anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. However, going back to the definition about it being explicit or implicit, coded or not, right, that the critique could descend into anti-Semitism. And sometimes we do see that happening.
George, I want to bring you back into the conversation because you talked for your series with 88-year-old Farrell Brody, a Columbus Jew and a former school teacher in Israel who helped found Jewish Voice for Peace. Here's what he had to say about criticizing Israel's actions in Gaza.
I can criticize my own government here in the United States, and I certainly do, especially these days. I can criticize Russia, but I'm not anti-Russian. But one country, one government that I cannot criticize without being called anti-Semitic is Israel.
And then let's also hear at this moment from Julie Tilson Stanley, the president and CEO of Jewish Columbus. She says free speech does protect criticism of Israel, but with caveats.
But we also must hold people accountable when that speech crosses the line into harassment, incitement for violence, or denying Israel's right to exist.
So, George, did you find evidence in your reporting that people protesting the war in Gaza had crossed that line into harassment, or maybe it's more the line denying Israel's right to exist?
What I definitely found was that a lot of the chants being used in these protests were hotly debated. You could see it in the national context with Columbia University's protests and others, that especially like from the river to the sea, that is a statement that is contested as anti-Zionist, right? As being like, hey, like we want to invalidate the whole state of Israel between the river and the sea. And that argument, you talk to protesters about that and they'll refute that and say, hey, we want to establish self-determination for Palestinians. But there are still a lot of Jewish people who take issue with that statement and who do feel that it is anti-Semitic and trying to invalidate the State of Israel. But there are other examples as well throughout the protests that people would say is anti-Semitic.
And Professor Judd, what do you make of what you just heard from both Farrell Brody and then also Julie Tilson Stanley, especially the part at the end where saying that like free speech is free speech until it crosses the line into harassment? But she also added in denying Israel's right to exist. Can you talk a little bit about that and about what George just said? Maybe we should explain the from the river to the sea part, too.
So I first of all, I want to commend George for the series. It was really quite excellent, and I appreciated the opportunity to listen in and to listen in to the interview of my colleague Ori Yehudai, who's a professor of Israel studies at OSU. So I don't necessarily see the two interviews as being grammatically in contradiction to one another, right? We had one interviewee who said, I can criticize this state of Israel and not be considered and shouldn't be considered anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. And we had another interviewee who said, criticism of the state of Israel isn't necessarily anti-Semitic, but if it crosses into hate speech or if it crosses into certain assumptions, then it could be considered anti-Semitic. Mm. And as George, I think, alluded to just now and again in his series, context is so important. And so there are certain claims that could be made where protesters might encourage for the elimination of the state of Israel, in which case, if one is denying the right of the state to exist, going back to the definition about what anti-Semitism is and it targeting Jews and Jewish institutions, then that could be considered anti-Semitic. For others who are calling for a critique and who are calling for the rights of Palestinians, that isn't necessarily anti-Semitic. And so again, it's hotly contested, it's very complicated, and often very much based on context.
Can you explain a little bit about that phrase that George mentioned, but from the river to the sea? Is that indicates what Jewish people consider the Holy Land? Is that what you mean? Is that what that
means? I would push back on two things, right? First, that there is even some sort of homogeneity of Jews, right? Jews, or as you referred, like the Jewish people are a disparate, very different group. And there are going to be Jews who are going to think one way and Jews who think another way and a third group who think a third group. Way and so on and so forth and so on and so forth. And so absolutely, there are going to be individuals, and I wouldn't just limit it to Jews. I would say that there are non-Jews who make this claim too, that there is sort of a biblical delineation of what the ancient sort of state it looked like or what the parameters were. And so for some, when they hear from the river to the sea, they're envisioning that it's not necessarily a throwback to this biblical parameter, but rather that there is being an argument made that the state of Israel, where it currently sits, should no longer be in a state of Israel. And again, like going back to George's point, the phrase gets used in multiple ways by multiple people quite differently.
We're talking about anti-Semitism in Columbus with George Shilcock, WOSU news reporter, who just released a three-part series exploring the topic. And with us is Ohio State History Professor Robin Judd. And Professor Judd, George also interviewed your colleague who you mentioned, Ohio State Professor of Israeli Studies, Ori Yahudai. Did I say it right? Yahudai? I'm sorry.
No, it's very close. Yeah,
all right. Yahudai. Yes, thank you. Sorry. He's a professor of Israeli studies and Ohio State University's chair of Israeli studies. He's also an Israeli citizen. And he said that anti-Semitics is very complex with a history that dates back thousands of years. Let's listen.
It's an old phenomenon. It started in ancient times. It's based on the accusation that the Jews were responsible for the killing of Jesus Christ and then continued to develop in the Middle Ages.
So he goes on to say that criticism of Israel is not equivalent to anti-Semitism, unlike what Jewish Columbus contends. But the idea that Jews killed Christ thousands of years ago, does that still persist today in some time when we hear about anti-Semitism? Is that correct?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I teach my history of anti-Semitism course, we often talk about the multiple forms of anti-Semitism and anti-Jewish thinking that have existed over time. And we begin in the ancient world with the early claims of deicide that Jews were responsible for killing Jesus, and how that claim then gets changed and transformed over time. Do all anti-Semites make the claim? Absolutely not. Like, as we started at the very beginning of our conversation, anti-Semitism takes multiple forms. And so particularly as we move into the modern period, we're going to see various forms of anti-Semitism, but religious anti-Semitism is certainly one of those strands.
And George, bringing you back into the conversation, you spoke with Professor of Israeli Studies, Ori Yuadai. Is there anything else that he talked about that you wanted to add to the conversation?
So what Dr. Yehudai and I talked about, I think what I found really, really interesting was when I asked him about anti-Zionism and whether that can equate to anti-Semitism, right? And specifically in the context of these protests. And he had a very nuanced opinion that kind of almost changed a bit as we were talking. Like, I asked him if criticism of Israel in these contexts, like being anti-Zionist and saying like, hey, their actions as the Israeli government's actions in this war, whether they're justified or not. He at first was just like, I think, yeah, there are efforts to, quote, like paraphrasing him, he said, like, yeah, there are efforts within these protests to try and delegitimize Israel. And when I asked him if that is hate speech or a political opinion, he did kind of relent and say, like, yeah, I think it's more of a political opinion, but it could, depending on the context, again, this is kind of the key point in this conversation, depending on the context, it could also be invalidating something that a lot of Israeli people, a lot of Jewish people hold dear, which is the idea of the state of Israel.
And Professor Judd, just to have you weigh in here before we run out of time, the idea, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but there's the idea that anti-Semitism comes from many forms. You know, we have neo-Nazis or like radical Christian groups marching down the street, and then there's pro-Palestinian protests. As a history professor, how do you decide what, you know, which parts of anti-Semitism and where it comes out at? And like whenever you're studying this, how do you just wrap your head around it all?
Well, I do go back to that definition about thinking around these questions of what does the hostility, the prejudice, the discrimination, the violence look like? What is the language that's being used? Are there assumptions that Jews have some kind of power? Is there even an allegation that Jews all think the same way? So to go back to George's point, right, I really think a lot about context. And I think that's where historians can contribute to these conversations, because we spend so much time diving down and thinking about the specificities of time and place.
And we didn't even get into within this conversation, whenever we talk about the history, but getting into the aspect of the Holocaust, because I think that there's a lot of people today, whenever they try to think of the history of anti-Semitism, they're not thinking all the way back thousands of years. They're thinking about that part. Professor Judd, would you agree that that really influenced how maybe the average person thinks of anti-Semitism today?
I certainly think so, although I probably would want to complicate it a little bit and argue that there are moments in history that shape historical memory. And for many of us, for you and me, and maybe for George, right, the Holocaust looms large in how we think about Jews and the assumptions of Jews in the larger populace. There would have been a population pre-1939 for whom certain pogroms would have loomed large in how they understood what we might call anti-Semitism. And so again, it goes back to this sort of context, time, and place. But I think you're absolutely right. The history of the Holocaust and the legacy of that very much is looming large, kind of presenting itself in how Jews and non-Jews think about the anti-Semitism and what that means.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I wanted to note that we did invite Jewish Columbus to be on the show today. They did not answer our emails or a phone call. And we did reach out to Jewish Voice for Peace to be on the show, and we didn't hear back from them either. Ohio State University History Professor Robin Judd, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me here.
And WOSU News reporter George Shilcock is staying with us. Coming up, we're going to talk with the Council on American-Islamic Relations here in Ohio. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Jewish Columbus reported a candlelight vigil at the Ohio State House to Columbus police. The vigil was a silent tribute to the tens of thousands of civilians killed in Palestine, and it was held by the Noor Islamic Cultural Center's youth group. Jewish Columbus holds the viewpoint that criticizing Israel is a direct threat to Jewish people. However, many pro-Palestinians believe that criticizing Israel is entirely separate from attacks on Judaism. Still with us is George Shilcock, WOSU News reporter, who just released a three-part series on anti-Semitism in Columbus. Thanks again for being here, George.
Of course, Amy.
And joining us now is Khaled Tehrani, Executive Director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations here in Ohio, also known as CARE Ohio. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So,
good to see you, George.
Thanks, Khaled.
So how does your organization feel about Jewish Columbus reporting any protest activity from Islamic centers to the Columbus Police Department or Franklin County Sheriff's Office?
Well, I think it is definitely counterproductive. It does not create goodwill among communities of faith. Unfortunately, Jewish Columbus has been a major force in trying to dox many Muslim activists and Arab American activists, particularly the Council on American Islamic Relations. It's very unfortunate that at one time we wanted to sponsor an event with the city of Columbus, and Jewish Columbus threatened to withdraw their support and their sponsorship of that particular program if CARE is part of it. So we don't see this as about the criticism of the Israeli regime and their genocide against the Palestinians. It seems that Jewish Columbus, unfortunately, has an issue with the very existence of Muslim Americans in the public space where they can be an effective voice on behalf of Muslim Americans and on behalf of the rest of America. I mean, the rest of America is really tired of the Israeli genocide against the Palestinians and the Israeli apartheid regime, and attempting to muffle that speech, at least here in Columbus, by Jewish Columbus, I think is unfortunate, and it really does not serve the larger Jewish community. I want to make sure that I stated very clearly that anti-Semitism has a long and tragic history, and any attempt to minimize or dismiss anti-Semitism, I believe, is inherently anti-Semitic. So we're not talking about hating Jews because of who they are or because of their ethnicity or what they believe, or none of that. It is about a political discourse that Jewish Columbus and the likes, like ADL, another organization, they're trying to stifle our speech and even trying to codify it through legislation and exerting their power and their influence. And Jewish Columbus is an influential organization here. that attempting to stifle our First Amendment right to freedom of speech by saying criticism of Israel, a foreign state, is hate speech. And I think that is wrong. And that is, I mean, the only one that I believe is going to be happy with that kind of politics and with that kind of effort by Jewish Columbus are the real anti-Semitics who hate Jews because they are Jews. Mm.
So Jewish Columbus is saying that they are reporting activity, whether it's a candlelight vigil or a peaceful protest or a very active protest. They're reporting it for awareness so that the police are aware that it's happening. That leads me to use the word they're reporting it for protection, George, right? Am I right? But they're using the word awareness more so. Is that correct?
They're really sticking hard to the word awareness. Mm-hmm. That was their response to my story, was trying to say this was for awareness. We weren't reporting it. It was for awareness. But
so what does
awareness
that make?
Of what?
Yeah, that's yeah. What does that make you feel whenever when you organize a protest? I'm sure that if it's going to be a large group, you alert the place that you're planning on meeting that you're going to be there. So that's awareness as well?
You know, think about it. I mean, let's just use a metaphor. If a black person is walking in a white neighborhood, and we're going to report it to the police just for awareness. Just for awareness. You know, we're not saying he's a bad guy. His skin happens to be black, and we're just reporting it for awareness. This is BS, really. I mean, this is like, are you serious? Like, do you really think that the public is just that stupid that they're going to buy that you're reporting to the police? And who is reporting it? The chief of security or the person in charge of security for Jewish Columbus reporting a candle vigil? To the police, and you're saying, oh, it is only about awareness. Yeah, I mean, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I can, you know, I'm offering today the Brooklyn Bridge at 50% off if Jewish Columbus wanted to buy it.
So how, since the October 7th, 2023 attack by Hamas in Israel, how has CARE Ohio changed its alignment with the Palestinian cause? Because, I mean, this war, this Israeli-Palestinian conflict, goes on long before October 7th, 2023. So how does CARE align with the Palestinian cause, and did it change in the past 2 years?
Well, I mean, think about it. Now we're talking about anti-Semitism, which has been modified by the likes of Jewish Columbus and the ADL and other extremist pro-Israel organizations to mean criticism of the state of Israel. And think about it. There is a genocide going on right now. The world community have declared that Gaza, the 2.3 million Palestinians in Gaza, are actually in a state of famine. Children are dying of hunger that is imposed and manufactured by the Israeli occupation. Only yesterday, 5 journalists and a doctor were bombed in what's called double tap, which means they bomb a place, which happened to be a hospital. Journalists went there, and doctors and paramedics were there to rescue people who were bombed. And then the Israelis bombed again that place, and killing about 20 people. 240 Palestinian journalists have been killed since October 7th. 70,000 Palestinian civilians have been killed. The highest number of children amputee of any conflict anywhere since World War II. If you bring all of those amputees combined, what happened in Gaza since October 7th exceeds that number of all conflicts anywhere in the world combined. And what we're talking about, some person in Jewish Columbus is very uncomfortable with criticism of Israel and wanted to weaponize anti-Semitism to talk about anti-Semitism, as if that criticism of the Israeli genocide and the war crimes that are being committed against the Palestinians as anti-Semitism. Council on American Islamic Relations is the largest civil rights organization for Muslims in the United States, and when Baltimore was being hit by police brutality, we stood up with Baltimore. When bad things happen in the United States, whether it is Muslims or non-Muslims, we stand up and we want to be counted. And the change that has happened since October 7th is that all these war crimes are being committed, and And Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE Ohio in particular, have been in the forefront in protesting and demanding a ceasefire, calling on Franklin County, for example, to defund or to divest from Israeli bonds. Israeli bonds are bad anyway. They're being downgraded, and yet Franklin County is the second largest county in America, investing tens of millions of dollars in Israeli bonds. Why are we doing that? I mean, like, what is the message that we're sending? Is that really what the people of Franklin County want? And Council on American Islamic Relations is standing in the forefront to make sure that Israel, a state that is the recipient of the largest U.S. military aid in the world, is accountable to the war crimes that it is committing against the Palestinian people.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about anti-Semitism in Columbus with George Shilcock, WOSU News reporter, and Khaled Tehrani, Executive Director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, also known as CARE Ohio. George, you wanted to add something about what was just being said?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up, Khaled, you besides your faith, you also have a connection to Palestine as well. You are Palestinian-American.
Yes,
too,
I am.
Right?
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention that as well. You told me in our interview the story about growing up there and how deep this connection is for you.
Absolutely. I happen to be a Palestinian. My parents were born on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, and my oldest brother was born on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. And then in 1948, with the establishment of the Israeli state on our land, my family was forced out, and as a result, I was born in a Palestinian refugee camp. I spent the first 16 years of my life in the refugee camp, and to me, what was done to my parents pale in comparison to what is happening right now in Gaza, where it has been normalized that you find politicians, cabinet members of the Israeli state are calling directly for the ethnic cleansing and the genocide against the Palestinians, and we still, and we're talking about Jeffrey Epstein, and we're talking about anti-Semitism, and when war crimes are being committed. Imagine during the Holocaust, and nothing compares to the Holocaust, of course, but imagine that during the Holocaust that people are talking about, you know, how's the weather, or, you know, about the price of corn, or whatever else that they're talking about. We have a very serious, urgent problem that is ongoing. We're paying for, as American taxpayers, you know, 7 out of the 10 bombs that are being dropped on Gaza today are paid for by American taxpayers. Mm-hmm. And for us to be talking about anything else other than stopping the genocide, stop the famine, tens of thousands of trucks are literally less than 5 miles away from the Gaza borders. Mm-hmm. And instead, they're dropping these parachutes with some food packages, where actually some Palestinians have been killed because these parachutes happen to come at high rate of speed and fall on the heads of some of those Palestinians seeking that food package and killing them. Instead, we have tens of thousands of trucks just outside of Gaza. Allow those in. We have a famine that is manufactured, that is managed, that is engineered by the Israeli occupying power, and we're talking about anti-Semitism.
Before we run out of time, George's series was about anti-Semitism in Columbus, but do you feel that there is attention being drawn also to Islamophobia? Has that risen? Do you have numbers of reports of against Muslims related to the Palestinian cause?
Yes, we have seen a definite rise in Islamophobia, we're seeing that in the context, so much of it really, unfortunately, through reporting of people like Jewish Columbus and other organizations similar to Jewish Columbus in other cities in other states. Even in the state of Michigan, where there's a huge majority of Arab Americans and Muslim Americans, we're seeing a rise in that. We saw that in even liberal states like California and New York. Of course, in New York and what happened at Columbia, this is drawing that or bringing out that Islamophobic tendencies among some, using the false reporting that this is that these protests and these demonstrations and those students are really anti-Semitic, they're anti-American, and they come with an agenda contrary to quote unquote the Judeo-Christian. They want to kind of tie that. And organizations like the ADL have been instrumental in really creating that Islamophobia and hate. Actually, if we see that, if you look at what has happened since the early 2000s, we found that organizations like the ADL and the AJC, they've been in the forefront of perpetuating Islamophobia, and that has intensified since October 7th. And I talk specifically about in the early 2000s when they were talking about creeping Sharia law and all of that. That came from, unfortunately, organizations like the ADL and the AJC.
We've been talking with Khaled Tirani, Executive Director of the Council on American Islamic Relations of Ohio, also known as CARE. Thank you for joining us today. And we've also spent the hour with George Shilcock, WOSU news reporter, who just released a three-part series exploring the topic of anti-Semitism in Columbus. Be sure to find all three parts of George's series at WOSU.org. Thanks for your time, George.
Thanks, Amy.
And this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jarovich.